You're listening to the No Fibs podcast series. My name is Charlie Caruso, and I have the honour of turning the tables on Margot Kingston for this podcast, and I get to interview her. So, Margot, welcome to the No Fibs podcast as a guest this time.
Hi, Charlie.
Now, before we get into the election and perhaps your hopes for this podcast series, can you first start with how the No Fibs movement started?
Well, I wouldn't call it a movement. I sort of got enraged by something Tony Abbott was doing to Julia Gillard in the late 2012. So took to Twitter after 7 years in exile from online media and did a few tweets. And a few old web diarists sort of turned up, and one built me a website, and that sort of started off as Australians for Honest Politics, and then became No Fibs. So I've been sort of dipping in and out ever since.
And a lot of the, certainly on the websites, talks about citizen journalism. So what do you think that's missing from mainstream media that No Fibs is attempting to address?
Being on the ground. So in 2013, as my Twitter followers know, I've argued for more than 20 years now at the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age that rather than this constant on the bus stuff, that it'd be really good to actually track a campaign on the ground from go to woe, like enter into the drama of the story, introduce the characters, and witness and observe and report on the leaders and the ministers coming to town from the outside, from the voters' perspective, not the bubble perspective. I just asked people if they'd like to report the seat where they live, and we got about 15 from all over Australia, all different styles. All interesting in their own way. A lot of them interviewed the candidates, so they'd interview the most bizarre outsider candidates, and that was some of the most interesting stuff, actually. But of course, the big thing we did is Indi, and the way that happened was I really wanted to do Indi, and I ended up just begging on Twitter. And this guy phoned up and said, oh, look, I don't write, but I'm a photographer. And I just said, look, could you please cover it in pictures? And that was Wayne Jansen. And he's since become a prolific writer, reporter, and is now our chief reporter. So Indi we covered from the very beginning, really in-depth. We had pieces by the other candidates. We had backgrounders on how the movement Voices for Indi started. We had news reports from Wayne all through, and it's just the most fabulous archive of a breakthrough campaign and a breakthrough movement of both how to win as an independent in a safe seat, but also how to build a grassroots movement towards participatory democracy. And it's that movement, Voices for Indi, that spawned Voices for Farah, which is put up a candidate with a real show in Farah this time. Voices for Warringah, which was part of the movement that got Zali up. So I'm just really proud of that, and it's just the most wonderful archive of what happened as it happened. And ever since, I guess I documented the Pauline Hanson trip in my book of her 1998 election campaign, I've always wanted to do work that is like a documentary, in the moment documentary for future people to have a look at and get the feel of it, not just dry analysis. So that's sort of the general thrust of what I'm looking for with citizen journalists is people on the ground reporting what they see.
It's quite inspiring, really. I mean, obviously, Cathy McGowan's story, which was, you know, as you mentioned, heavily covered by yourself and the No Fibs team. And then we've seen...
By the way, Charlie, not covered. Not covered by the mainstream media. The mainstream media rushed in the middle of the last week because, you know, all they do is talk to their analysts on each side, and they suddenly said, oh, geez, Cathy might be a chance. So, you know, we actually covered the thing. And Cathy, it all intertwined with Twitter, which is my preferred medium now. Cathy had Twitter workshops and got all these middle-aged women on who were just fabulous. I invented the Indi Votes hashtag and got all the candidates in the newspapers to agree, and it just became a fabulous news and views feed. As it grew, liberals came in and arguments developed and all sorts of discussions occurred, but it was the hub for the campaign. And ever since then, I've tried to established this protocol, sometimes successful, sometimes not, where you put the hashtag and the seat and votes after it, so that particularly in this election, where there's so many interesting seats out of, you know, off mainstream seats that are now in play, it's really good for Twitter to have those seat hashtags, that news feed, so that they can follow and also get involved when they want to.
It gives the impression, Margot, that it's almost like Australians are taking their politics back. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I mean, the rise of Twitter, Facebook, and now Instagram has clearly meant that the conversation has broadened considerably. People can they can have their own blogs, they can have their own Twitter accounts, which are micro blogs. They can have all sorts of discussions on Facebook. So, you know, in some ways, mainstream media is a secondary medium rather than the prime medium. A lot of their stories, have you noticed, come from Facebook or come from Twitter. Just a little example. Yesterday, Kevin Mack in Farrah put up a Facebook post where, I can't remember his name, but this really big deal pastoralist just outside Farrah now since redistribution, the guy who took the video of the Menindee Lakes fish kills, like this really big deal guy. So it's a picture of him and Kevin and him in a Facebook post saying, I would like all farmers to put Kevin Mack first and Susan Ley, the Liberal, last. Now, that is a big story.
Yeah.
And that is a Facebook story. A lot of the mainstream media hasn't taken it up yet, but we're working on it. Now, how did I find that story? Twitter.
Yeah.
Someone posted it on Twitter. So let me give you another example of how Twitter's ahead of the game. This morning, right, Karen Gilbert from Sky posted a tweet where Michelle Laundy, who's the LNP candidate in Capricornia, ultra-marginal seat in central Queensland, He did a screenshot of the Rockhampton Bulletin where she said she was going to put Fraser Anning's candidate above Labor and the Greens. So I choked on my coffee, you know, immediately tweeted it. Like literally within 5 minutes, Karen had put another tweet up saying, LNP assures me that Fraser Anning will be put last, okay?
Yeah.
Then about an hour later, Morrison had a doorstop. And he was asked about it, and he said, that's a matter for the National Party. They can decide to preference Fraser Anning if she likes. So, wow, he wasn't briefed. So he's now exposed as someone who has no problem. So, you know, in terms of breaking news and fast news, Twitter is way out there. In terms of the community conversations, having been in Cowper for 2 weeks and watched that work, it's great how old journalists like me can sort of get into it. Like his media director is the former retired ABC Sports broadcaster, Debbie Spillane. And she runs Rob's Facebook and is very, very particular about tone. But I'm not a Facebook person, but having watched it, the way you can sort of put up stuff that encourages people to talk to other people about certain things, it's a very big group. And it sort of, it makes the volunteers completely part of the campaign. Very, very powerful.
Well, it is. Twitter is very much changing the paradigm and the public discourse. I mean, look at Watergate, for example. I'd argue that mainstream wouldn't have picked it up and that pressure around Watergate wouldn't have existed without Twitter.
Well, the way I first heard about that story was a long thread by Ronnie Salt, a tweet who's a solicitor, I believe. And I didn't tweet it because I just thought, look, it's unsourced. It's very serious allegations against Angus Taylor. I'm not going to retweet it. People begged me to retweet it and I didn't. But it was retweeted everywhere. Mm. And the next thing, I get a legal letter from Angus Taylor's lawyers, and so did Michael West, the journalist who'd also retweeted it. Saying that, you know, we're going to be taken for everything and lose everything, etc. Then I found out that I actually, although I hadn't tweeted it, an automatic tweet from my Twitter Times had come on, which I'd immediately deleted. So that was the start, right?
Mm.
I've been told since that me publishing that letter actually drove the story a bit further mm-hmm. because it was so outrageous. Then the project did it on the Thursday night before Easter with Michael West.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the next 3 days, Twitter just went wild with the story. Mm-hmm. Michael West published a scoop, Ann Davies published a scoop in The Guardian, and it was building and building. It was the number one trending topic all weekend. And the media just seems to have taken Easter off, apart from sort of, you know, running the PR for the leaders on Easter events. And the pressure just built and built and built until Twitter pressure, until finally the press gallery sent in its most senior journalists on Easter Monday to take charge of the story and make something happen. Ever since then, it's been on the boil. So that is a story that would never, ever have happened but for Twitter. Just would not have happened.
And yeah, and yet Twitter were deleting. I mean, Ms. Veruca, who first launched it, she was... Twitter sort of took her down, and I assume that's under request of, I'd imagine, Angus Taylor. I mean, we don't know. Twitter hasn't come back officially. Look, but
it's a bit murky. The only sort of comprehensive story on it has been by Lane Sainty for the BuzzFeed. And according to her story, she said sources told her that Twitter did not take it down. I haven't spoken to Ronnie about it.
Right.
My assumption was that Angus Taylor's lawyer said to Twitter, take that down or you're on notice, you'll get sued.
Right.
But as of now, we don't know, and I haven't spoken to Ronnie about it. But, you know, she's back up and she's doing her tweets again.
That's right.
Maybe what happened is Angus Taylor's lawyers put the screws on her, and she thought, well, I'm going to go down for a while. I just don't know.
But it's what's really interesting to me is the platform's doing so much, but it's really the players behind the platform are getting their opportunity to have an audience, to have a voice, and to publish, their views and their takes. And that's really, from my perspective, what you've utilized this power and this platform in what I'd argue, you know, unlike anyone else has done before, certainly in Australia, especially with regard to your supporting of the independents.
Well, it's been quite a journey for me on Twitter. I mean, I have, you know, got followers because of my previous work. You know, I was a political journalist for a long time. But basically, I'm out of the game. I'm retired. All I've got is my Twitter account and my NoFibs website. And I was just, you know, I was just thrilled when it was a day before yesterday, the Oz ran some story about Watergate, about Little Proud referring Watergate to the Auditor General. Mm-hmm. And they had this paragraph in it that the furor was fueled by Michael West and self-proclaimed citizen journalist Margot Kingston, who is supporting the regional independence. And I just thought, wow. If they're prepared to say that a tweet has fueled the furor, then wow, I've still got a job to do, haven't I? Even though I'm still on Twitter, I'm just on Twitter.
Absolutely, it just goes to show the power of that medium, the power of that platform, and largely the wide gap that mainstream media are leaving. That I think Australians notice. They notice that there are certain stories not being covered in the way that they'd like. Yes. And there's no more evidence around how independents are covered. So talking about independents and their coverage, obviously the No Fibs podcast series is off to a cracking start. What are you hoping to achieve with the podcast series?
Well, I have to give complete credit to you, Charlie, because I remember just before the election started, you DM'd me and said, is there anything I can do? And I sort of came back with standard stuff. And I think in the end I said, do you do podcasts? And you said, yes. And I said, you're in. And it's just been just the most amazing development for us to have podcasts. I was a bit scared of them, but now I really enjoy them. And I see the podcast not only in the current sense of helping independents have a voice given they're in such a great disadvantage because of money and the way mainstream media works, but also again as an archive. So what I'm hoping to do in the last 3 weeks, or probably the last 2 weeks of the election, is go back and interview them all again and talk to them about their experiences, their highs and lows as standing as independents. And I think that those two interviews of, you know, what have we done, 10 or 11, will be a really nice archive for people studying independence and how things can and can't happen. One of the big things that the independents did a week or so ago now was sign a joint statement calling for a Royal Commission into Watergate, and saying the broader point that this just showed why we desperately need a federal ICAC. And what that did with them getting together is it sort of, it gave a narrative. I mean, something about the media that one independent, they go, oh, that's just an independent, but a group of independents, they see it as like a narrative they can grasp onto. And as a result of that, some of our independents have got really good coverage. Adam Blakister in New England standing against Barnaby, Jeremy Miller standing in line, Alice Thompson, a bit of a breakout star for us, sort of did a whole thread on, you know, what the Watergate scandal showed about the collapse of accountability. And she got on ABC News TV and RN Drive. And then the three leading independents, Helen Haynes, Kevin Mack and Rob Oakeshott, got on an RN Breakfast show where the lead question was the statement and Watergate. And, of course, Kevin Mack has really taken it the bull by the horns. And, I mean, here's another story about how citizen journalism can work. As soon as Watergate happened, I got Wayne to go and see Kevin. He got some absolutely amazingly strong quotes from Kevin about Watergate. He wrote the story up quickly, published it on Easter Sunday, and that clearly woke up the big paper there, the Border Mail, who went out and got really incendiary quotes back from Susan Ley and ran a page one Lee Watergate the next day. So one, we're more nimble, but two, we get down on the ground where it matters. So I'm really, really pleased with the podcast and with the print coverage so far.
Well, I'll give you a bit of feedback I got. I did an interview on behalf of NoFibs yesterday with one of the two independents running that I'm aware of in WA, Dr. Jill Horton. She's running for Tagny. And she made the comment to me after we'd finished that she's just so grateful to NoFibs because it for the very first time, it doesn't feel as isolating. It feels like there are other people around Australia that are supporting her, whether they're
Their
electorate or not. She said that the mental health benefit and of that feeling like there's people watching and has her back, she said it's hard to put it into words. And I just thought that's such an amazing bit of feedback about the role that obviously yourself is playing and NoFibs are playing into the lives of the independents.
Well, just to turn it around as a journalist, and yes, I am an advocacy journalist at the moment, but to ask sort of 10 different people questions about their campaign, all of whom come from different walks of life, different geographies, have completely different styles, every single one of them answered my questions. You know, you've got no idea what a relief that is to a journalist. You know, you just get, I don't even bother listening to most political interviews now because you just know it's going to be, you know, crap, you know, running their own lines, refusing to answer the question, blaming the other side. You know, it's just, it's past its use by date. But these people were so refreshing. And, of course, the other common feature, which Dr. Horton is the same, is that none of them had been involved in politics before. They were stepping up for the very first time, which is the reason I'm doing this Independence Day project. This election is so crucial for Australia's future and the world's future, really. Like, we need to lead the world on climate change.
Absolutely.
And we need to clean up our democracy. Like, it's dirty now. It's corrupt. We need to have a federal ICAC. We need to have donation law reform. We need to have lobbying reform. We need to clean it up. People of all sorts are standing up and saying, what can I do? And, you know, to be frank, it's pretty inspiring.
Well, you had an amazing lead on to my last question, which was, if anyone's listening that hears this story and really does want to help support your efforts and the NoFibs efforts, either with obviously supporting the podcast series or for, you know, the website for NoFibs in general, how do you suggest that they show their support?
Well, the main thing I want is I want more people on the ground reporting those seats. I want to get as many voices as possible. I was really worried about New England at one stage when we didn't have anyone. And now we've got this amazing farmer and we've got this great lady who's sort of generationally classic New England writing for us. And they are the most, as far as I know, maybe it's changed, Charlie, but they're the most popular stories.
Mm.
They're really, really popular. So, like anyone in if you live in Cowper, Lyne, New England, Farrer, Warringah, Wentworth, McKellar, Mallee, Kooyong, Flinders, then please write for us. Go along to candidates' forums and write up reports. Write about what you see on the street every day. We would really appreciate it, and tweets would really appreciate it too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking your time out of a pretty wild time in the lead up to this year's election, and look forward to hearing your interviews in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you, Charlie.